Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Lieutenant General James Rodebush, Surgeon General of the U.S. Air Force. Also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Tom Romeo. General, traumatic brain injury, or TBI, may be what some have considered the signature injury of Iraq in the Afghanistan wars. Could you describe what really constitutes TBI? And second, could you tell us about the research being pursued in TBI prevention, assessment, and treatment? And finally, how prevalent is this in the Air Force?
The issue of traumatic brain injury certainly is an injury and a condition that is rightfully occupying a great deal of attention and focus. As it's referred to as the signature injury, I think the way that my counterpart, General Eric Schoomaker of the Army Surgeon General, described it, the IED is the signature weapon, which has a variety of injuries associated with it, which could be blast, could be penetrating injury, could be the concussive force, which can result in traumatic brain injury. So I think as we put traumatic brain injury into the constellation of injuries that can occur as a result of the really devastating weapons that we're seeing, it does help us think about the individual as a whole person and think through the implications for caring for that individual. Now, traumatic brain injury in and of itself is something that in some regards we have certainly been aware of over time immemorial. We have referred to that as a concussion, which could be as a result of a blow to a head, which could occur in football, could occur in a fall. But in this regard is rather more traumatically induced by a very heavy blast, which has both sound, has overpressure, has the concussive force that results in this injury. Not every traumatic brain injury is of the worst possible nature. We certainly do see that, but there is a whole spectrum that goes from very, very mild to very, very severe. And one of the challenges of dealing with traumatic brain injury is fleshing out our knowledge of the entire spectrum of TBI, both in our ability to detect it, to characterize it, and then appropriately treat it. So as we look at the whole spectrum of TBI, we know that we have research that needs to be done. We know that we have treatment modalities that need to be addressed and improved. And we know that we have a long period of treatment generally that's going to be required because the treatment of traumatic brain injury does require taking care of that individual over a significant period of time, working through the evolution of the injury and hopefully the recovery of that individual from the injury itself. So traumatic brain injury is something about which we have significant knowledge, but there are also significant areas that that we need more research, that we need more understanding of both the pathophysiology as well as the treatment of this. But it does occupy a very central focus within our activities. Congress has been very forthcoming providing resources to us to examine both traumatic brain injury as well as post-traumatic stress disorder. So we do have the resources, we have the opportunity, and we clearly have the need to better understand and to be better able to take care of this particular injury.
General, I've always been impressed with some of the long, very long distance missions that the Air Force flies. You know, I take a 5-hour trip from the East Coast to the West Coast, and I'm just completely wiped out. How do you avoid and mitigate the effects of some of these long duration missions or poor sleep due to combat operations?
Well, the impact of time and distance has long been an issue for the Air Force. When we were able to put forces or to take resources and assets literally around the globe, you're going to be crossing multiple time zones, and you're going to be inducing what is known as circadian asynchrony or jet lag as you move across those time zones. There's a variety of ways to deal with those. Importantly, there are strategies in terms of how you prepare yourself, your sleep cycles, your work cycles that allow you in great part to mitigate the impact of jet lag. There are also strategies that involve exercise and what you eat, the kinds of food you consume. Coffee is not a panacea. In fact, Coffee may be one of the largest culprits in trying to deal with jet lag, as is alcohol. As travelers, not military travelers, but as travelers know, too much to eat, too much to drink, whether it's caffeine, alcohol, or whatever it may be, simply makes things worse. Now, in the military sense, of course, alcohol has no place in those strategies, but the fact is that what you eat, when you eat it, how you exercise, when you exercise, how you work your sleep and rest cycles are really the most effective strategies. There are pharmaceutical approaches to this which are available, and those are used in very judicious and very structured ways, and almost always only as a final resort if, in fact, that's operationally required and is appropriately administered. It can be a useful adjunct. But the real strength of the strategy is in managing all those other aspects of both your sleep, work, exercise, and eating habits. And you can do that. And frankly, just as travelers around the world, there's a great body of literature that speaks to that that I would recommend to anyone who's looking at multiple time zone crossings. It can make life a lot easier.
General, psychological health means much more than just the delivery of traditional mental health care. Given operational tempo and the stress it places on service members, what has the AFMS done in the area of mental health? And specifically, would you elaborate on the programs in place to diagnose, prevent, and treat the service members in need?
Certainly. Psychological health is an important aspect of overall health. The first thing that we do is work to both establish and sustain a healthy fit force. And that has to do with all parameters of health, cardiovascular health, fitness, psychological health, and emotional well-being in terms of assuring individuals that their health care needs will be met as well as their families, because that does give you a sense of reassurance and well-being. So as we take care of our airmen and their families, we look towards the establishment of that healthy fit force and healthy, resilient families, which really provides the best basis for ongoing psychological health. Now, as our airmen, as well as soldiers, sailors, and Marines, go in harm's way, we do several things. Before we deploy an airman, we assure that their health is as it should be, both physical and psychological. And if there are issues in either regard, we address those. And if the individual should not deploy, they don't. But the fact is, we examine first to assure that all aspects of health are present. When deployed, we continue to surveil and to support and to assess and intervene if required, if someone is having either physical or emotional health issues. We have the assets forward to assist in addressing those. And then as individuals redeploy, we reexamine their health with a post-deployment health assessment, which is principally a survey, but it's also an opportunity to meet with a healthcare provider and assess any issues that that might be attendant. And then understanding that psychological issues can evolve after return home, at about that six-month point out, we do a post-deployment health reassessment. One, to reexamine the health and well-being of the individual, but also to provide another opportunity to work with a healthcare provider if, in fact, that's the appropriate thing to do. So we work to provide that continuum of health. Now, in addition to that, just in day-to-day activities, we have mental health providers basically embedded in our family health units to provide the full spectrum of care for both our active duty and their family members. We've found that putting behavioral health experts in with our family medicine teams really leverages the capabilities of both and allows us to approach issues in a way that is both conducive to quick recognition and resolution, as well as reducing any perceived stigma of emotional or behavioral circumstances that folks might not want to talk about otherwise.
Great. You mentioned that, you know, an important aspect of psychological health for the airman is ensuring that his family is safe and secure. What programs are available to families to support them while their loved ones are deployed?
Well, for our deployed folks in our active duty forces, there are significant and very effective family support activities at the wing level and the unit level right down to the squadron to support those families and to support the commander in supporting both the families and the troops that are deployed. Those are coordinated in a variety of ways at the wing level through the Family Support Center, which really provides, I think, good support as well as a safety net, if you will, if there are issues that need to be addressed. For our reserve and guard forces, that continues to be a bit of a challenge because, you know, those families may not be near a military installation. So our guard and reserve leadership are working and continue to work to assure that those families, too, are well cared for, and if they need support, that they're able to provide it. Now, in addition, there's also a capability called OneSource, which is a network or a system of support functions that are accessible through the OneSource avenue that really brings a variety of support capabilities to bear if, in fact, the OneSource portal is engaged. So that is another another aspect of support for the folks that remain home while their loved ones are deployed.
Could you elaborate on the research initiatives you are pursuing to advance the delivery of care, training, and disease surveillance for your airmen? And to what extent do these research initiatives, such as the partnership between the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center and the use of virtual medical trainer, improve the health of your airmen and enable the Air Force to proactively meet their needs?
Well, our partnership with the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center has been a very productive partnership. They have worked with us, and we have been able to leverage each other's expertise in approaching a variety of issues. You mentioned the virtual medical trainer, which allows us to further the training and the fidelity of the training for our medics in caring for a variety of illnesses or operating in a variety of operational circumstances without necessarily having to put people into those circumstances. The virtual or simulation capabilities as they increase in fidelity are truly remarkable resources for a very cost-effective way to train and prepare our medics to do a variety of missions. We're also working with UPMC in diabetic research, looking at how we can improve the care of diabetics and the training and the knowledge base for anyone who has that diagnosis to help them better care for their own diabetes in a way that prolongs life and improves the quality of life as they go. So research in that regard has been very productive. Other avenues of research for us have been in the area, again, of the informatics, how we support these activities, utilizing or mining data to better understand illness, pathophysiology, and the treatment of that illness. So the research in those regards has been very beneficial. In addition, and I mentioned very briefly previously, the research that is ongoing in traumatic brain injury and PTSD, which is really tri-service and VA research focused at the Center of Excellence, which is being established here in Washington at the new Walter Reed National Military Medical Center, gives all the services an opportunity to leverage really aggressive research both in the military but also in all aspects of academia to bring to bear some very important capabilities on these very demanding issues that are before us.
Now, General, I understand that the use of telehealth and telemedicine is another important area of focus for your organization. We only have about another minute left, but could you elaborate on some of your efforts in expanding the presence and the use of telehealth and what clinical situations present the most promise?
Telehealth is an opportunity really to leverage technology. I'll give you, in just the brief time we have, a very good example of that, and that has to do with teleradiology. We are working to establish a network wherein virtually any radiologist within our Air Force Medical Service can read any film, regardless of where it might be, simply by moving the images on a network between the point where the image was taken to the point where the radiologist is available to read that, and then immediately transmitting that reading back to the originating site for utilization by the healthcare providers there. That network exists in large part today. Within the coming months to a year or so, we should be able to fully leverage that capability across the entire AFMS and literally worldwide.
That's great. Thank you. What does the future hold for the Air Force Medical Service? We will ask Lieutenant General James Rodebush, Surgeon General of the U.S. Air Force, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.